This story is about a young couple, Ethan Walton, only 19 years old, and his girlfriend, Amanda Burney, only 20. They traveled to a remote Oklahoma farmhouse on September 8th, 2010, to complete a land sale. But they suddenly find themselves in a deadly situation, all alone with a stranger that has evil intentions. One of the eeriest parts is that Amanda had a vivid dream the night before, and that dream became like a psychic premonition and a nightmare that was about to play out in real life. The first thing I want to do is set the stage for you and talk about the location where these horrific events you're about to hear took place.
Tucked away in rural Pottawatomie County, a crime so horrific, a community's left shaken.
About an hour's drive east of Oklahoma City, there is a city called Prague. It's in Pottawatomie County. It's a quiet, rural farming community of about 2,000 people, many of whom live there for generations. It is quite appealing for those who want to live off the beaten path because there's a lot of acreage and most people have farms connected to their homes and there are not many, if any, neighbors nearby. So it is safe to say it is in the middle of nowhere. I want to introduce you to Ethan. Ethan is 19 years old at this time. He's his family's firstborn and he's humorous and charming, but most of all, he really is known for having a compassionate heart. He sticks up for people who can't stick up for themselves, even back in kindergarten. He was standing up to the other children for bullying a girl with cerebral palsy. His mother recalled that this little girl was being bullied and her classmates were calling her retarded. I'm not using that word. That is the word his mother said. Ethan had no fear. He approached the children and he stated strongly, "She is not retarded," despite the fact he was only 5.5 years old at this time. Ethan was also naturally gifted in sports. At the age of 10, he was already a devoted hockey player. His mother recalls pushing Ethan to play hard and play through his commitment, even when he wanted to quit. He said at one point, "I don't like that they hit so hard." And this was the beginning of his life lessons about not giving up. And he learned he needed to finish what he started, and this made him a better person as a result. By Ethan's teens, he had grown to 6 feet tall and wore a size 13 shoe. He was a big boy. He was also an all-around athlete. He did football, wrestling, pole vaulting, and track, and he was not only talented in athletics, he was also a very talented musician. He was a skilled saxophone player who could pretty much play any instrument. The list of his talents go on and on. He was a sketch artist. He did these imaginative drawings and he even created a tattoo that he had on his right arm. Something else that shows you what kind of character Ethan had was that he had a terrible knee injury. This was during a football game and he refused to give up until he finished. He ended up with a fractured knee and he was hobbling around on crutches, but he still came to every single practice and every single game to support his team, and his kindness didn't end there. His mom said that one Sunday morning, they were on their way to church, and he had just had a late night out with his friends, and he told his mom, "I drove the group home last night. I wanted you to know because they drank too much, and it was unsafe for them to drive." He was only 17, and he didn't even have his driver's license yet. He risked getting in trouble to do the right thing. And his mother was so proud of him for that. Ethan was working at Ponderosa Restaurant, and it makes sense because he enjoyed serving people. He enjoyed working in a pleasant setting where he could be himself while also making people happy. Ethan grew up in a large family. He was the oldest of at least 9 children, from what I could find. And this was a blended family, so there was a lot of half-siblings and step-siblings. He was born in Washington, but he grew up in Urbana, Oklahoma. I hope I'm saying that right. But then his family relocated to Prague while he was in high school. His friends referred to him as E-Man, and he had a great sense of humor. He was always playing practical jokes on his friends and his family, especially his younger sisters. And when his parents would check his sister's chores, he had sprayed cooking oil all over the dishes that his sisters had just washed. And when his parents returned, they would have the sisters wash all the dishes again until the girls were able to get them completely clean and successfully complete their work. So yes, this was irritating, but I also find it to be very funny and clever. So I know I'm going on and on, but I really do like to introduce you to the victims in these cases. I think it's very important to keep their memories alive. And you could tell Ethan was a pleasure to be around. And of course, he was easy to adore. And from the moment Amanda and Ethan met, they became friends right away. Amanda could tell by the way he treated her and others that he was a generous man. Their compatibility was one of the reasons she was drawn to him, and eventually they began a committed relationship, and they had a great time together. Before Amanda graduated from high school, they had already been dating for a year and a half, and they had just attended prom together 5 months ago. They had recently gotten engaged, and they were finally taking this significant step forward in their relationship, and it was only a matter of time before they tied the knot, established a family, found work, and enjoyed their lives together. But that was about to change. In the fall of 2010, Ethan and Amanda are enjoying breakfast at Amanda's sister's house. Her name is Alicia. Amanda and Ethan came over to Alicia's house to use Alicia's car so they can run an errand. Amanda and Ethan were planning to meet a buyer for a real estate deal that day, and Ethan was selling a portion of his family's land to a man named Glendon Carl Gawker. He was 39 and he owned a firewood business. This was thrilling for the couple, since Ethan's father had agreed to let him retain the money if he found a buyer. Amanda and Ethan planned to use the money to begin their lives together. It turns out that Ethan didn't actually know Glenn personally. He just knew that a little while ago, his father had sold Glenn some farming equipment. But during that transaction, Glenn's check bounced. So he did ultimately pay Ethan's dad and make everything right, but that's just something to remember. Glenn lived on the outskirts of town, almost an hour away from Ethan and Amanda. So that afternoon, Alicia needed to run errands of her own. So even though they were taking the car, she needed it back. So they promised her, "We won't be long. We're going to complete the deal and then we're going to return right away." Amanda then told Ethan that they had to go because it was already 8:30 in the morning and they wanted to get back by noon. If everything went according to plan, Ethan and Amanda would exchange this contract for $30,000. And that is a substantial amount of money for the young couple, but also for anyone. Even though they were excited about the sale, Amanda did not feel right. Her mood had been off all day. She had this weird, sinking, dreadful feeling inside. Recall the premonition. The night before, she had a nightmare about the world ending. She woke up and she was crying. She had never experienced anything like that because the sensation still lingered. It came over her. She didn't feel right. It was just making her feel like something was going to happen and it wasn't going to be good. The following day, the feeling did not go away. That sensation had been following her around the entire time, and she was trying not to let Ethan know because she didn't want to ruin the day. About an hour after they set out on the trip, Ethan and Amanda finally arrived at Glenn's ranch. It was on this dusty moccasin trail road, and the area looked to be deserted. Yes, there were acres of land, but Glenn lived in a mobile home. And all around the land, there were stacks of wood, little outbuildings, and heavy machinery that he used for chopping and moving wood for his company. There was also garbage everywhere. There were like rusted tractors and several other pieces of rusting farming equipment. It was a mess. It looked like a dumping ground. Okay, so I'm a little bit obsessive. Maybe a lot, and I spent about an hour, possibly more, tracking down the location of Glenn's home. I wanted to get a feel for what it looked like, and even if this isn't 100% accurate, it's so close. It had to be within just a few miles of the location I'm going to show you because I traced Moccasin Trail everywhere, and I found the crossroad that they mentioned, and there isn't actually a home in that exact area, but this was the closest I could get to that original location. Back then, you can see this picture, it was known as Shadowland, and I researched and discovered that area has a new name, Snyder Farms. It looks like it's owned by a completely different family. There's a little chapel right here, And look at these barren roads. There's nothing. There's trees, mud, tumbleweeds. I kind of see a property behind this property, and I'm assuming that this is what Glenn's property kind of looked like. There was a lot of land. There were, you know, buildings there. The first neighbor was probably a half mile away. But back to Ethan and Amanda, there appeared to be no one in the trailer home, which was confusing because they had been planning this deal for weeks. And at this point, Ethan becomes worried and he asks Amanda whether Glenn specifically instructed her to meet at his house at this time. And she informs him, yes, he did. And it was Glenn's decision to choose this day, this time, and she was just following his instructions. Ethan decided to go up to the front door. So he gets out of the car with the documents and he knocks on Glenn's door and no one answers. I can imagine this being really frustrating. I have a pet peeve for people being late or not showing up or when they at least don't tell me that they're running behind. But especially when we're talking about a major business transaction and an hour drive. It seems really unprofessional, rude, and flaky. Plus, this is the guy that had bounced a check for a much smaller amount a couple months earlier. I was thinking maybe Glenn got cold feet and Ethan started thinking the same thing, but the property was really big. So he just assumes Glenn is working on something. He can't hear me knocking. Ethan goes back to the car. He's frustrated. He wants Amanda to double check and then show him what Glenn said. Amanda says, yeah, here you go. And she shows him that right before they left Alicia's, Amanda did text Glenn that they were on their way. She even called him when they were getting in the car and actually told him they were leaving. So he knew. Amanda shows Ethan the text and Glenn had just said, okay. And they were on their way. So now he goes back over and he tries again while Amanda decides to stretch her legs and walk around and get a good look at the place before they're selling it. The town that they were in as a whole was vast and sparsely populated, as you could see. And this was 10, 11 years ago. So you can just imagine it was probably less populated, if that's even a possibility, because there's like nothing there now. The properties that were there were really spread out, and most people had at least a few acres of land. And the property that Ethan was selling was connected to Glenn's land, which is probably why he wanted to buy it so he could expand his property past the boundary line. Maybe he wanted to make a house instead of having a mobile home, plant crops, or just basically extend his dumping ground. But either way, the land was large, and past it, there was nothing. There was just more land as far as your eyes could see. Now on the other side, back the way that they came, Amanda did see a couple other homes, but they were at least, like I said, like a half mile to maybe a mile in the distance. So far off the beaten path. She approaches the fence that divides the two properties and she's just looking out and gazing into the distance, just looking at the land. She's never seen it before. And she does start to admire this quiet, calm feeling, and the air is different, and she could hear the sounds of creatures in nature and things like that. We've all been, most of us, in nature. We know we can hear everything when we don't hear things like the traffic and industrial things going on. And at this point, she kind of understands why it's ideal for some people. Out of the corner of her eye right then, she kind of notices Ethan is walking to the back of Glenn's property and he's tapping on the windows and he's trying to get someone's attention. It's just kind of something she took note of, and then she turned her gaze back on the land, and that's when she felt a presence behind her. Amanda was startled because when she turned around, she saw a woman standing so close behind her that she was almost touching her back. Amanda jumps up and she lets out a scream. She couldn't help it. And the woman is just staring at her, just a blank stare from about only a foot away from Amanda's face. Amanda's nervously apologizing at this point for getting startled, but this woman didn't even seem to care. She wasn't inviting, and she definitely didn't seem friendly. Just like many of us, Amanda tried to ease the tension, and she told her, you know, it's not personal. I'm so sorry that I got scared, but I'm in the middle of nowhere, and I'm just a little bit uneasy. I'm not used to it. So she apologizes, says she's sorry, and this woman doesn't say anything. The woman just seems to stare at her. She's cold. She doesn't respond to anything related to Amanda's apology. She just says, can I assist you? And at that point, she's almost staring through Amanda. Amanda says, actually, my fiance, Ethan, is looking for Glenn. But this creepy woman doesn't really try to break the ice, even though she does introduce herself. She told Amanda she was Glenn's wife, Michelle, and that Glenn wasn't home. Amanda's trying to hide her frustration, but it may have been apparent when she explained to Michelle that they had an appointment with Glenn. She said, you know, this is an important appointment. We drove an hour to get here. We've already been waiting a good 20 minutes. Amanda goes on, tells her about the land sale and the contract that needed to be signed, and the woman just stares, confused and annoyed. But at that very moment, Ethan came up and introduced himself to Michelle. Michelle seems much happier to be speaking with Ethan than with Amanda. So Michelle once again introduces herself, and then she said that she thinks Glenn may have gone off to the bank, considering there was an exchange of money happening, but that he wasn't there and she wasn't able to help them. Ethan said it was fine. He would stop imposing and they would go back to the car to wait for her husband to return. When they finally got to the privacy of the car, they did let out their frustrations. They were very stressed because they had limited time to get things settled and then make their way back home to drop off the car to Alicia. However, they are a young couple. They're not skilled in commercial dealings, and they were really apprehensive about this whole situation at this point. They all of a sudden had this fear that they might be taken advantage of, and they realized we could be over our heads. They weren't aware of the procedures regarding land sales, and now they believe it probably would have been better to meet at a bank or to have the contract negotiated by a lawyer. However, it's too late because Glenn was already walking up the gravel road and they were not going to back out now. Ethan could tell that Amanda was nervous, but he cheered her up because he said, listen, don't worry. As soon as we're out of here, we're going to celebrate. Glenn approached the car and Ethan got out and went over to the passenger side. He saw Glenn just staring at Amanda, and she's beautiful. I'm sure it would be hard not to stare at her. She had pretty blonde hair and hazel eyes. And of course, she sees him gazing at her, which made her feel even more uneasy. But she knew, okay, I need to maintain my composure because this is business. But rather than getting straight into business, Glenn says something to Ethan like, hey, are you going to introduce me to your pretty little girlfriend? So, of course, Ethan motions for Amanda to roll down the window. Ethan introduces Amanda to Glenn, stating that this is actually my fiance. Glenn, like many older people do, and I don't know why they like tease you about your relationship, like as though it's just puppy love, but he says, no, we're really serious. We're moving in together and we're getting married. Even though Amanda was annoyed with Glenn, she thought he was friendly enough. He seemed like a normal guy. He was maybe like rough around the edges, but there was nothing that struck her as odd or anything that seemed off at that point. Glenn tells Amanda it should only take a few minutes and that she should probably wait in the car. And she was relieved because that kind of gives you an excuse to leave. So you don't have to stay any longer than you have to. She told Glenn it was nice meeting him. And then the two men walk back towards the house to finish the business. She does catch a glimpse of them and they're walking toward the back part of Glenn's property where the outbuildings and the sheds were located. She starts to become pretty restless and after about 10 to 15 minutes, she wonders why it's taking so long. She attempts to be patient, but she had no idea how long these things take. So she ends up falling asleep. She has no idea how long Ethan had been gone, but eventually Glenn comes back to the car. She's expecting to see Ethan, but she realizes Ethan is not with Glenn. He comes to the car, asks her to roll the window down, and he says, would you mind coming inside and witnessing the contract? Why would she be worried about this? She's not. She knew that the contract probably needed a witness. She thought it would only be a couple minutes. She doesn't take her phone because Ethan has his phone, doesn't know why she would need it, and she follows Glenn to the back of the building. While they walked, Glenn thanked her for coming. He said he was really happy and he was excited about getting the land. She responded in kind and they continue walking toward this big shed. Yes, it was odd. Why would you be doing a business deal in a shed and not in your trailer or like an office in your trailer? But when in Rome, right? This is the backcountry. They obviously do things a little different, maybe a lot different, because Amanda doesn't know that minutes later, she would find herself in the most dangerous situation she's ever been in her entire life. This is when it gets serious, because as soon as they turned the corner to head into the shed, Amanda knew something was wrong, but her brain wasn't processing it. She was seeing it, but it's almost as though her mind didn't want to receive what was right in plain sight. She didn't want to think it was real, or she couldn't believe that it could be real. It was Ethan. She saw him lying on the ground, and she was trying to comprehend what he would be doing on the ground in the fetal position. She saw his bright orange and white shoes, and she knew in that moment that something terrible had happened. This wasn't normal. Before she could move or scream or realize what was happening, Glenn grabbed her from behind. He put his hand over her mouth, and that's when she felt the cold steel barrel pushed up against her temple. Glenn was laughing, and he made a remark about them really thinking he was going to give them 30 grand for that piece of land. He was clearly never planning on paying them for that land. Maybe he wanted the land, but he wanted them out of the picture so that he could get it for free once the deed was signed. Or worse, maybe this was his plan, to hurt an innocent person all along. Glenn wastes no time at all. He picks Amanda up. He throws her on top of a big, deep freezer that's in his shed, and she's pleading with him, "Please do not hurt me. I'll do whatever you want. You can have whatever you want. You can have me." Because she knows at this point, she's going to be fighting for her life, since she knows she can see Ethan is not in good shape. Meanwhile, Amanda and Ethan's deadline for returning the car to her sister has passed, and Alicia has no idea why Amanda isn't back yet. She also has no idea what Amanda is going through. This is so wrong. It's so frightening. But he makes her undress, and she reluctantly obeys all of his commands. She removes every single article of clothing. And without going into detail, I believe if you've watched the previous couple videos on Wayne Adam Ford, you can form your own mental images of what these types of individuals do to these unfortunate women. But he had his way with her, and it wasn't soft, and it wasn't romantic. It was extremely violent, and he did whatever he wanted numerous times in various different parts of her. He didn't just do this one time. He continued to do it over and over and over again, at least three times in the shed. All the while, she's trying to block out the sound of the love of her life moaning in pain and choking on his own blood as he's witnessing the heinous acts that are being committed on Amanda without being able to protect her. After Glenn had finished for the last time, he duct taped her mouth because she was screaming and trying to break free. He then handcuffed her to a pole in the middle of the shed. She was unfortunately now closer to Ethan and in earshot of all of his moaning and his gurgling sounds that he was making because he was clinging on to life as hard as he could. Ethan was crying. It must have been so heart-wrenching because here you are listening to someone you love dying in front of you. It's terrible. Amanda had to listen to this for hours. Glenn left them in the shed, and he is spending a lot of time getting rid of any evidence on his property. He had to hide the car somewhere that nobody would find it, gather tools to get rid of Amanda and Ethan. It's so morbid. And in my mind, I can just imagine him rummaging around his property, trying to think of the best way to discard of these two human beings like garbage. It's sickening. Meanwhile, Amanda's sister is getting more and more concerned. Hours have now gone by. She's called both of their cell phones throughout the entire day. And then she calls around. She calls her mother. She calls Ethan's family to ask, "Have you heard from either one of them?" They weren't answering anyone's calls, and everyone's getting worried. Many thoughts go through your mind. I know, because I am an anxious person. And you think, They may have been driving, they crashed, maybe they're lost and they have no cell service, but you don't necessarily think they were murdered. I mean, I personally tend to think that, but I don't think the average person thinks that. After hours in the shed, Amanda's weighing her options, and there definitely wasn't many. She knew she didn't want to die. If she was going to die, she was going to die putting up a fight and die trying to live. But deep in the back of her mind, death was just not an option. There was no time. There was no time for fear. There was no time to think. She was already witnessing her fiancé on the brink of death, and she didn't think he was going to make it. She's handcuffed to this pole, and she's trying to somehow slip the handcuffs off. She started sliding her arms like up and down the pole to see if there was any weak points or to loosen it from the ceiling or the floor, but it definitely wouldn't budge, and the handcuffs were tight. There wasn't any wiggle room. They were locked against basically the bones of her arms. It didn't even matter because Glenn came back. He uncuffed Amanda, and at this point, she makes a run for it. And I'm thinking, yes, she's getting away. This was her chance, but she didn't get far. He caught up to her, and he was even more pissed off at this point. He grabbed Amanda and moved her inside the trailer. She was kicking and screaming the entire time, and this seemed to make him even more angrier. He opens the door to a room. He throws her onto the bed. Here she was, completely naked. He ties her to the bed. Her wrists were tied to the post on the headboard and her ankles to the posts at the end of the bed. And she is stretched out, completely spread eagle. It's humiliating. She has no control and she's begging him to let her go. She promised she wouldn't tell anyone about what happened, but he ignored her, slammed the door, and left the room. She wasted no time analyzing every inch of that room that she was able to see from where she was tied up. She noticed there was a window behind her, and guess what? There were guns. There were guns lining the walls. This was pretty much their gun room. There were guns on racks on the walls. There were some leaning against the wall, on furniture, guns in the corners. And there was also a bunch of knives in there. Amanda's starting to scan the room and her mind is racing. She's trying to think, what is the easiest way out of here? And then she hears footsteps and she thinks Glenn's coming back. She's lying there as still as possible. The door opens slowly and then someone enters the room and it's Michelle. So Michelle must be coming to her rescue, but she wasn't. I mean, where's the girl code? Would Michelle want this done to her or her sister? But then I thought of Jeffrey Epstein and his accomplice, fiance, partner, Ghislaine Maxwell. She allowed countless unsuspecting young women who trusted her to be taken advantage of and abused. And that's what Michelle's doing. Amanda doesn't know. Michelle isn't on her side, but she's sitting there begging her to untie her. She asks and pleads, please help me. Then Glenn pops out from behind Michelle and he turns to her and asks her what the hell she is doing. She must be just as scared in a way because this man's capable of this. What else is he capable of? She tells Glenn to shut up, that she was just checking on their guest. He pushes Michelle out of the way. He closes the door and he proceeds to go up to Amanda and just grope her. Ew, 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 ew. I can just imagine his big, sweaty body and he's just like breathing on her and it sickens me. He tells Amanda not to try anything stupid because he will be checking on her. And if he finds out she did anything, he's gonna come back and take care of her. Someone else was checking on Amanda and that was her sister. It had been 7 hours since she was supposed to return with the car, so Alicia is no longer frustrated. She's terrified. She decides to borrow a car and go looking for them. And I would do the same thing. I'm the oldest of 4 sisters, so I feel like I have a duty to protect my younger siblings, but I probably would have called the police first. At least so they could do a welfare check, but yeah, I'm not sure I would go there all alone knowing my sister hasn't come back. But a lot of people decide to drive the same path to see if maybe they broke down. And she knew where the couple was headed, so she drives out to Glenn Gawker's property by herself to look for her sister. Amanda is being checked on every 10 minutes, sometimes less. So it's pretty unlikely at this point that she's going to be able to escape. But that doesn't stop her from trying. Every time Glenn leaves the room or closes the door from just peering in and checking on her, she is wrestling with the ropes on her arms and legs. Good thing she wasn't handcuffed, because she's wiggling them around. She's moving them up and down the posts. And then as soon as she hears anyone, she lies completely still again and lifeless. She starts to notice that one of her hands is coming loose from the rope. The more she pulls on it, the more it starts to release. She gets a rush of adrenaline and realizes, okay, wait, I can work with this. I may be able to at least get one of my hands free, but can you imagine? I mean, I'm on the edge of my seat and I already know how the story ends, but in that moment, it must be a combination of exhilaration and fear. There's just a rush of emotions all at the same time. She noticed that Glenn hadn't checked on her in a while now. It was always Michelle. Glenn was actually busy taking care of Ethan. Now Amanda gets a plan. She would work on this hand and then get it loosened. But then every time Michelle came to check on her, she would tie it back. Like, she would twist the ropes around her wrist and just pretend she was still completely tied up. Michelle wasn't even diligent when she was checking in. She would open the door, almost like even a crack, look inside, make sure Amanda was there, and just close the door and leave. All Amanda had to do was remember to look exactly the same way that she did when Michelle came to check on her. Finally, she has one hand completely free, and oh my God, it would have been, to me, it would have been terrifying, because I would be scared I would get caught, but this is your only hope. After that hand was free, she starts focusing on getting the other hand loose. And it was easier now because she could use the hand that she freed to loosen the rope on her other hand and not rely on just tugging it. Then, of course, every time, every few minutes, she had to twist those hands back into the ropes and go back into the position she was in. She did this over and over and over. And all the while, she didn't know how long she would have until Glenn came back and took care of her once and for all, but she knew it was only a matter of time. Now, this is devastating, but remember, she has duct tape on her mouth. She is tied to the bed. She's in a trailer away from the main dirt road near the house, but she could hear a car pull up and she doesn't know whose car. But can you believe her sister is so close, yet she is so far away from knowing what anguish Amanda's going through as she's pulling onto this property? Glenn sees the car. He freaks out. He tells Michelle to stay there. Someone's here. Go watch Amanda. He's going to find out what this lady needs. Oh my gosh, I'm sitting here thinking, Alicia's going to be his next victim, because this is, he's going to take care of all these people so no one knows what he did. However, Michelle actually tells him not to do anything stupid, because I think she knows they're already effed. They really don't need to add a third victim to this situation. Glenn greets Alicia with a, "Howdy, ma'am." He's acting all friendly. She rolls down her window to speak with him. I'm like, don't get out. Don't get out. Don't get out. And make sure your doors are locked and you only roll that window down a centimeter. Alicia asks him, "Are you Glenn Gawker?" And he says, "Yes, ma'am." So Alicia explains she's worried because she's looking for her sister, Amanda, and her fiance, Ethan, that they were supposed to come out here this morning to make a land sale. Glenn assures her that is exactly what the couple did and that they were there earlier, like Alicia expected them to be, but they left hours ago, around noon. Alicia asks Glenn, "Do you know where they were headed?" And I cannot believe that this guy can stand there and lie to this woman. But he says, "Oh, Ethan was so excited after the deal was made that he said he was going to a BMW dealership in the city." And Alicia is stunned. She asks him, "You mean Oklahoma City? Because that's another hour away." Glenn says Ethan wasn't specific, but he guesses that's what they meant. Then he tells her, "Yeah, they just took the money and then they were off just like that." Alicia has no real reason to think that he's lying at first. And now she's frustrated again because that was not the plan. So she thanks Glenn and she starts to drive away. But on the other hand, she knows her sister. She knows Ethan. She knows what their characters are like. She knows the people that they were, that they cared about their family and keeping promises, and they wouldn't have just gone off like that. Something definitely felt off. Amanda knew her sister was outside. She heard Glenn tell Michelle. She knew in her heart that someone would come looking for them. She just knew it. And she was in there unable to scream. She was unable to alert Alicia that she was right there. Glenn comes back into the house. He tells Michelle that he thinks Alicia is going to come back with the cops. And he wasn't done covering his ass from taking Ethan's life. So he had to get back to that while Michelle continued to watch Amanda. And the next time Michelle left, Amanda was able to slip her other hand out of the ropes. And she can sit up. So she began to untie her legs from the bedposts. She gets them untied. She is free, in a sense. But then again, she's not. The very first thing she does is try to find a gun. But she also has to be really quiet. One false move and she is done. So she gets a hold of one of the guns. She opens it. She realizes there is no bullets inside. She couldn't believe it. It's like the world was playing a cruel trick on her. A room full of guns and not one of them she had checked had any bullets inside. I'm not trying to be funny, but it does sound like an Alanis Morissette song. For those of you that are my age, you'll know what I'm referring to. A room full of guns with no bullets inside. She feels completely defeated. They knew there were no loaded guns in that room. That's why Glenn and Michelle didn't care that Amanda was in there. Amanda doesn't know if Ethan's dead. She's determined to get out of there, and instead of sulking or quitting, she just comes up with a new plan. She grabs a hold of one of the knives. She knows she's no match for Glenn, but that is all she has. As soon as she gets her fingers around the handle of the knife, she hears footsteps, and it's Michelle. The door starts to open and Amanda grabs the doorknob and she tries to hold the door closed as much as possible, but Michelle's on the other end and they are both struggling back and forth. And that's when Amanda's survival mode kicks in. She starts to slash at Michelle's hands, but unfortunately Michelle is able to slam the door shut and lock Amanda inside once again. She knows Glenn is going to be back for her and she knows she has to act fast. She knows this is truly her last chance, and she's scanning the entire room for a way to escape this nightmare. She can hear Michelle running to Glenn and telling him Amanda stabbed her and tried to get out. She sees the window and it gives her hope, but it won't budge. No matter what she tries, it's completely shut, almost like it's glued closed. There's no way out. And at that moment, her adrenaline is in high gear. This 90-pound girl pulls down the curtains, wraps them around her fist, and punches the window as many times as she had to until it shattered. I don't know if I would have thought of that, but now that's in my head. And this is insane in a good way. It's unreal. It's survival. But remember, she's also completely nude. And she gets herself onto the window pane. It's full of glass. It's probably cutting her up. And she's risking getting wounds on her body. She jumps from the window onto the glass on the ground. She doesn't care if it cuts her feet. Moments later, Glenn opens the door to find the room empty and Amanda nowhere to be found. He freaks out and goes into a blind rage. He tells Michelle to get outside and look for Amanda now. They must find her. She's a witness and she can hear Glenn screaming her name. And he says, "I'm coming for you and I will find you." The very first thing Amanda thinks of is Ethan. She could not leave him. She was so scared and alone and just been through this horrific ordeal. All she wanted was the comfort of someone who loves her. So she turns toward the shed to check on Ethan, but then something inside her makes her stop. She could feel in her heart he was gone. She just knew it. And it was as if Ethan was telling her to leave him, to try to save herself, and that's exactly what she decides to do. She begins to look around the property for a way to get out and to get help. But at the same time, Glenn and Michelle, who know the property really well, are looking for her, and they have that advantage. It's completely dark outside, and this is why I think it is so important to scan your surroundings at all times, especially when you're in a new place. And I think Amanda did that in a sense, because when she was taking time to look out at Ethan's land and Glenn's property, to observe how vast it was, she was also kind of taking in what the perimeter looked like and what was on the property. We somewhat record that in our minds. And she knew where the road was relative to the trailer and the shed, but she knew if she went toward the road, she could possibly flag a car down, but that wasn't smart. And that's what we would think to do. I know I would. I would say, okay, I'm going to go to the road. I'm going to stand out there. But remember, this is like a desolate area. And if she goes there, there's no place to hide. There's no cover. Michelle and Glenn are going to be driving their truck. The headlights would come on and shine right on Amanda. They were bound to just run her over. So she decides to take the biggest chance of her life, and she decides to run across the field in the dark without knowing where she would end up. All she cared was she wanted to get as far away from Glenn's property as possible. Amanda hears gunshots. She realizes that Michelle is shooting up and down the property. Amanda isn't hidden behind anything. She could easily be hit. So now she's crawling on the ground, trying not to be seen, which makes her go way slower than being able to run. I don't know how far this house was, but she finally ends up seeing one and thinking, oh my God, thank God. It's Glenn's closest neighbor, Caroline Adams, and she's home alone that night. Visitors don't come around this area. She definitely wasn't expecting a random, completely nude stranger banging on her door. I don't think anyone is. Caroline opens the door a crack, and Amanda about falls into her arms. She has blood on her hands and her body from stabbing Michelle. She's soaking wet from sweat. She's covered in grass and dirt and who knows what else, but she's hysterically crying and asks Caroline to help her. So of course, Caroline is probably stunned and she says, "Who are you?" Amanda can't control herself. She's crying and crying, and through her tears, she's like hyperventilating. She was able to mutter something about her boyfriend and that he might be dead. They were after her, and please, please, please help me. Caroline asks her, "Who is after you?" She says, "Glenn." Caroline jumps into gear at this point. She slams the door. She tells Amanda to follow her right now. It's hard for Amanda to trust anyone. This is another stranger. They're in the middle of nowhere. She doesn't know what type of people live out here. It could be a damn murderous cult for all she knows. So she's hesitant, but Caroline tells her, "You're safe. Please try to calm down so that I can help you." She tells Amanda, "I'm going to call the police." And she does. I actually have the recordings of the 911 call, so I'm going to play a little bit of it, but it is really hard to hear and understand. So I'm going to put the text up on the screen as well. So if you're not looking at the video and you're just listening, you might want to look so you can see what's happening.
911, what's the address for emergency? 911, what's the address for emergency?
Yes, sir. I've got a, just sit right there. Okay, I've got a lady in my house. What is your name?
Amanda Burney.
She said she was kidnapped by Glenn down here at the woods place. Somebody is shooting.
To recap for those that couldn't look at the screen or couldn't hear, she tells the police, "I've got a lady in my house. Her name's Amanda Burney. And she says that she was kidnapped by Glenn down here in the woods, that she was forced to have sex with Glenn, and that Ethan may be dead." Caroline then hears gunshots outside. She realizes Glenn is probably going to check everywhere, including her home. So she tells Amanda to hide. "You gotta stay calm and you have to stop crying so you can hide." And she hides inside Caroline's closet. Guys, these homes are trailers. They have thin walls. If she's crying, Glenn might hear her. He's gonna come to the door. So she tells Amanda to get in the closet, try to be quiet and keep the door shut. You can hear the truck coming down the dirt road to Caroline's house. You could hear gunshots, screaming. But Caroline, she risks her own life for Amanda's. She's helping her survive. So she had to put on her big girl pants and walk out there. That's exactly what she did. She barges out the front door right into her driveway and she yells out to Glenn and says, "Who in the world is making all that noise?" Glenn comes into view and she acts like she's surprised to see him. She says, Glenn, is that you? Amanda's hearing all this. She doesn't know if Glenn is going to shoot Caroline. She's still on the phone with the 911 operator. And I will play you as much of this call as I can. But like I said, most of it is unintelligible. The police say, okay, we are on the way, but this is the backwoods. It's the country. This is not a 5-minute drive from the police station. So Amanda just has to hold on as long as she can. Caroline is yelling to Glenn, what are you doing on my property? He ignores her and he is screaming for Amanda. He's like, Amanda, are you in there? I can't imagine the fear that this poor girl is feeling in that moment. Caroline repeats to Glenn, what are you doing on my property? And she steps between him and her home. That's ballsy. She asks Glenn, what are you looking for? Glenn says, I'm looking for a friend. He asks Caroline, have you seen anyone around here? And Caroline's like, why would I see anyone? Why would anyone be around here? I've just been watching TV. I haven't seen anything. It doesn't seem like Glenn believes her at first. And he says, are you sure about that? I can just imagine him just coming up to her with his hot, musty breath. And he's all sweaty, getting right in her face. And he says, this is serious. And she says, well, wouldn't your friend be looking for you at your place? Why would they be here? The cops tell Amanda that now they're only a few minutes away. Glenn threatens Caroline and says, if she's in there, someone's gonna pay. Caroline snaps back and she's like, well, guess what? Frank's gonna be home any minute. And he's not gonna be too happy that you're on our property. Michelle starts yelling at this point. She's like, Glenn, we're wasting our time. Get back in the truck. We need to go. Caroline doesn't budge. She stands outside, arms crossed, just watching them drive off before returning to her house. This woman's a hero. She had the courage to face this potential killer, to calmly stroll out of her house with confidence and confront this man, gun in hand, rage in his eyes, knowing what he had done to this poor couple. Police arrive at Glenn's as well as Caroline's house, and they save Amanda. Glenn is apprehended, and the search for Ethan began. As Glenn's sitting in the cop car and they're searching the premises, he tells one of the cops, he's in the barrel in the shed. And the cop is confused, and Glenn repeats, the guy you're looking for, he's in the barrel. This is just sad on so many levels, but the cops open the shed. It's dark. There's dust in the air. It's a mess. And they see a 55-gallon oil drum. And they knew. They knew, but they didn't know what to expect when they pried it open. I'll tell you this. From what I read, this is one of the most horrific scenes some of these cops had ever seen, especially from this small town. And mostly because this was done to a young man like Ethan. He had been beaten to death severely. His hands were handcuffed behind his back, his legs were duct taped together, and he was thrown upside down into this barrel like a piece of trash. They also found Amanda's clothing underneath Ethan, and it was just unfathomable what a human being could do to another human being, especially to this innocent young man. Police think that Glenn planned to dig a hole, put the barrel inside, and hide it, but he ran out of time when Amanda escaped.
A week and a half has gone by since Pottawatomie County deputies searched this firewood business near Prague. Inside, they found the body of a 19-year-old man stuffed into a 55-gallon drum. Gauker handcuffed and bound Ethan Walton before striking him on the head. Walton languished on the floor in his own blood in the presence of Glenn Gauker until he died.
Poor Ethan died from blunt force trauma to his head. And authorities went to question Glenn. And guess what Glenn said? Can you guess? He told them this was in self-defense. Are you kidding me? Oh, you will hear more about Glenn's excuse. And yes, he has one. And he has his own rendition of that afternoon. And his family has their own perspective on what the facts are and what actually happened that night. And speaking of family, Glenn had two of his daughters. They were only 4 years old. They were twins. They were in the trailer the entire time all of this was happening. And guess what? You know, Michelle, Glenn's wife, Well, she's also his half-sister. Yeah, they have the same father. You're going to hear more about that in a moment. Here's what Glenn's mother had to say about what happened.
That Ethan had agreed to the price Glendon offered him, and the paperwork was all done up, and they were signed it yesterday morning. I absolutely think her claims are bogus.
Galker's mom says she spoke to her son several times Wednesday, and everything sounded fine. Then, this morning,
he called me, and he said, "Mama, get an attorney." He said he came back to rob me. He said, "Get Michelle out of here. She had absolutely nothing to do with any of this."
Galker's mom says she believes her son and stepdaughter Michelle fought back after a home invasion by Walton and his girlfriend and likely got scared when Walton died.
You mean to tell me we're supposed to believe this innocent couple comes to your house to do a property sale and then comes back later to break into your trailer and rob you?
Investigators say it happened as the two tried to hammer out details on the deal. They say it's when Walton was killed and his girlfriend kidnapped and sexually assaulted for hours. She escaped to get help at a house nearby. That's what she told investigators.
I absolutely think her claims are bogus.
And you got in a fight with him in self-defense, and then you killed him. And when you realized it, you just panicked and you put him in an oil drum? Maybe that's plausible in some world, but guess what you don't have an explanation for? What you did to Amanda. No one rapes someone in self-defense. I'm sorry, nice try. And that's exactly what the sheriff deputy J.T. Palmer said. He said, quote, "Our theory on that is home invasions, you don't cuff and tape them and put them in a 55-gallon drum and seal it and tie them up naked to a bed. No, you call the police. Someone trying to rob you, call the police."
"Our theory on that is it's a home invasion, self-defense. You don't cuff them, tape them, and put them in a 55-gallon drum and seal them and tie them naked to a bed."
There were also drugs found in his trailer as well, and it seems as though they had also been in the drug business as a side hustle in addition to their firewood company. Glenn had to deal with those charges on top of kidnapping, rape, and murder, but the story doesn't end here because when this case was investigated, they got another hit on Glenn's DNA. It was matched to two other cases. The first one was a 1990 cold case involving the kidnapping and rape of a 20-year-old woman in Iola, Wisconsin. Glenn's apartment was on the same street. 2 days later, they got a search warrant for his apartment and his car. There were a half a dozen hunting knives, camouflage jacket, dark stocking hat with a mask, dark leather gloves, and those were all collected as evidence. At the time, they got his DNA, but they could not match it to anything until September 26, 2011. This DNA was 44 trillion times more likely to belong to Glenn than a random individual. That has to be him. Am I right? I know that there are several forensic scientists in our community that have previously engaged, so please help us. And was he really currently carrying out these crimes back then? Well, guess what? I looked up his criminal history and I discovered that he was charged with a sex offense as far back as 1996 in Wisconsin, and he served 2 years in prison for that.
Glendon Galker's mom says her son hasn't been in this kind of trouble before and would not be violent unless threatened.
The other case that he was implicated in was in 1992, so he was not in prison yet. The Waiwega farmhouse killings, and it's something I would really like to discuss in another video. It was Tana Togstead, only 23, and her boyfriend Timothy, 25. They were stabbed in their home on March 21st, 1992.
Waupaca County Sheriff's Department says Galker is a person of interest in the murders of Togstead's sister Tana and her boyfriend Tim Mumbrew in this home near Waiwega in 1992.
So when the 1990 case was mentioned in connection to the DNA in 2011, they found out that Glenn had lived only 15 miles from the scene of the incident, and then he relocated to Oklahoma the next year. His DNA is linked to that case, the double homicide, but police have never said how or why, but he is someone of interest.
Authorities say DNA evidence reviewed in 2011 linked Glendon Gowker to the crime. Gowker was already in an Oklahoma jail and could be connected to an unsolved double murder also in Wisconsin.
We're almost to the final stretch, but this next part is unfortunate in my perspective because the DA asks Ethan's mother, Kathleen, if she would consider taking the death penalty off the table in order for them to prosecute Glenn for these other crimes. Kathleen really didn't want to give up the death penalty. It was so hard. She was bawling her eyes out. She said, if it will help other people, though, find out what happened to their kids, she was willing to do it. And she had to put her feelings aside because she thought Ethan would be proud. I don't know if I could. I really don't. I might be a little bit more selfish in that moment. I don't know if I would have been able to have the strength. I did find a website with something written by Ethan's mom, and I really want to read it. You see, becoming evidence in a murder made it so Ethan's last wishes to be an organ donor could not be honored. But standing up for others does not end when you die. Not when DNA is collected. The DNA collected at the murder scene linked Ethan's murder to a multitude of crimes. I had to make sure that Ethan could, in fact, give to others even after his death. The decision was quickly made. I gave permission for an extension of time on the case, which allowed the officials to do their best to solve their cold cases and bring closure to other families. Some cases have now been closed after 22 years in a court, in front of a judge, and a serial perpetrator. Kathleen cried. She thanked everyone who investigated her son's murder and brought his killer to justice. She said, these selfish, immoral acts have been like a boulder. It's forever altered this family. These godless, murderous, incestuous, child-molesting serial killers robbed Ethan of his life. Glenn let him die in a lingering, painful, tearful way when he shoved him into a 55-gallon drum. These godless crimes have taught this family to hate. She said, this set of crimes has cost me hope. We don't trust anymore. I know I would do it all again. From carrying my beauty for 9 months, giving birth to him on May 21st, 1991, to the September 2010 funeral, and speaking at the sentencing on August 15th, I stood up to remind everyone present that Ethan was someone who mattered, beloved and missed, while helping bring closure to my would-be daughter-in-law, our family, and strangers in Wisconsin. That's just heart-wrenching. Like, I could hardly read those words. Michelle was sentenced to 20 years in prison for being accessory to murder and kidnapping, but for reasons that are not clear, she was released in 2017 after serving only 5 years of her sentence.
Kyle Gowker believes his brother and sister are innocent.
She's not a monster. She's never hurt anybody in her entire life. She never would.
I don't know how true this is, but I really don't have a reason to believe it's a lie. Michelle claimed that Glenn, who was 10 years older than her, had actually molested her when she was a child. And he did this regularly and even forced her to marry him. So she was a victim. She claims that Glenn would brag to her about killing people and committing other crimes, including firebombing a shopping center in Wisconsin. You might be thinking, what happened to Amanda? She lived. She's been suffering with PTSD and depression. She's tried to work through it, and she wants to help others. She's a part of victim advocacy groups, and she is so strong and amazing. We can learn so much from a person like her, and I found her Facebook page, and the last time I checked, she was traveling. This was last year. She's not very active, but I think with all that she's been through, she probably doesn't need the stress that social media can bring, and she probably doesn't want the attention. I know if it were me, I wouldn't want to constantly be reminded of the pain that I went through, and I wouldn't want to keep reliving it. I would just want to go on with my life and not go on social media. It's truly sad when someone so young is taken from the world like this. Ethan woke up that day with hope and happiness, and he never saw the light of day again. It's more than unfair. It should be people like Glenn that disappear from this planet, not someone kind and innocent and spreads love and generosity. It really is a cruel world out there. So stay safe, my friends. Thank you so very much for sticking around and watching and commenting and subscribing. I will see you in my next video. Bye.